Today we're discussing A Quiet Place Part 2, starring Emily Blunt, Cillian Murphy, Millicent Simmons, Noah Jupe, Demon Hansau, and John Krasinski. Directed by John Krasinski. Shh. This is Arnie, co-host of Now...
Oh, wait, we're beneath 3 feet of cement. This is Arnie, co-host of Now Playing.
I wasn't going to whisper through all of this. I'm quite loud in my opinions. It's Stuart.
And this is the host that always forgets to enunciate. Jacob!
Yeah, well, that's why we got retakes. Gentlemen, 578 days we've been waiting. Longer than the tragedy that spans this movie, we have been waiting to talk about this sequel. First movie pulled from the pandemic schedule.
We were so ready to discuss A Quiet Place and A Quiet Place 2, and man, the suspense was greater than anything in either of these movies, and I consider these pretty suspenseful movies. Will they air it? Will they air it? I remember I went to see The Hunt, and then the theaters closed their doors behind me.
Oh, that was the last movie you saw? Mine was Sonic the Hedgehog. 18 months without a movie, Sonic the Hedgehog.
At least you ended on a good one.
I don't know about that. Mine was Gretel and Hansel, a little indie horror thing by Anthony Perkins' son.
Definitely better than Sonic the Hedgehog. But yes, March 20th was supposed to be all about this movie. And yeah, we quickly pulled the Platinum series and said, let's bunk at Sleepaway Camp. And we'll get through it in the fall. We can do it when it comes out, right? No.
So optimistic.
Then we had to do Cloverfield, which was a pickup. That was a series we had promised and didn't do. So that felt okay. And they're also about Aliens, 3 films, it made sense. But boy, I was mad. Come January, and then, like, it's still not here. Like, we did White House Down and Has Fallen. It seemed to make sense for the time. But then they really tricked us, because we were already recording those shows when they said, oh, we are coming out May 28th, 2021. So we missed the theatrical window.
How could we believe them after all that? I mean, they were the movie that cried release date at that point. I felt for sure they wouldn't make that date.
Agreed. I was really like, screw you. Like, well, we'll just, I mean, we did the similar thing with Cloverfield when they had their surprise release at the Super Bowl. Like, if I had known about that when I was plotting the schedule, of course we would have put it on to time it perfectly. But yeah, we just missed the theatrical window. And maybe that's okay, because, you know, perspective, time away. This is a movie about coming out of seclusion and quarantine.
No, it's missed the window. Delta's back. We're quarantining again.
I've been outside. I've gone to a music festival even 2 weeks ago. I'm still wearing my mask, but I do feel more integrated with the world than I did a year ago. And so what will this movie have to say about that? That's certainly a new level they couldn't have expected when they made this film, that we're going to be able to view Quiet Place 2. What does it say about us coming out of quarantine?
Oh, yeah, there's definitely some COVID moments. Like, there's no way they could predict that, but that's our new 9/11, I guess. That's what we're going to see in everything.
And we were getting more integrated in society, though, because, Stuart, you and I went to see this together in theaters. Whether we were reviewing it or not, I liked that first movie enough. And again, I felt like the best place to have A Quiet Place was that movie theater that I saw that first movie in. So this came out in IMAX. Stuart, you and I went to have another Quiet Place experience in theaters.
Yeah, with a new level of horror. This time it was like, with every breath, am I really infecting myself? It was a small audience, which is surprising because it had a big box office. This was a big summer movie hit, but it didn't feel that way. I think we went to a matinee on a Tuesday, maybe. So, like, we just didn't hit it at a time when there were large crowds. And we didn't talk about it. I didn't say to you what I thought of it. You didn't say to me we were going to save it for this show.
And this is the third time I've seen this movie, because yes, when it was in theaters, I saw it. I was vaxxed. I was optimistic. Yes, I will go to a socially distanced movie theater at this point, and because super excited this. Now, my kids couldn't go see it because they are not vaccinated, but my wife and I were. So when it came out for home viewing, they super wanted to see it. So yes, watched it again. So like, eventually we got our whole family to see this in these weird COVID times because we couldn't all go together.
I'll just go ahead and preview that if we have reviewed it, Weekend of Release, I was really kind of conflicted. I walked away largely feeling like, Did this need to happen? Did we need a sequel to A Quiet Place? I felt like the movie was pretty wrapped up at the end of the first one. And I think Krasinski felt that way too. I think it took some coaxing and
some dollar bills.
Yeah, exactly. Look at all the money we made. Look at all the money we're going to pay you. This movie, part two, cost 4 times what the original one did.
What?
So they dropped the money bomb on it.
It must have gone to the CGI.
Yeah, I watched the bonus features on the Blu-ray, and he did say he considered the first one a standalone. He had no idea of a franchise, but what he said, you know, he's not going to say, I love Robert Downey Jr. He was honest. He said Marvel backed up the money truck. Those were his exact words. John Krasinski, I just couldn't leave it alone in my mind. I just kept having these thoughts about what happened to them next.
Yeah, the studio is whispering that to his ear along with lots of zeros in that paycheck.
Right. And they were right, because just looking at the box office, this thing pulled in $300 million worldwide. Even if there hadn't been a pandemic, what a victory for a horror movie sequel. Usually you don't gross as much as the original. This one did bigger. And so, yeah, I guess there was an audience hungry for this experience again.
I had no idea it made that much because of coming out, even though it was probably at the high point, it was pre-Delta and people were starting to feel good post-COVID and vaccinations and things. I still had no idea it did 300 million global. That's amazing. But it is, this whole franchise has been pretty language agnostic. When you make a movie called A Quiet Place, it's not so hard to change the subtitle language for the sign language going on.
Yeah, dubbed or subtitled, it really doesn't matter what version you see of this film. It's pretty much going to be an old-fashioned silent movie. I mean, with sound effects, it's not completely quiet, but a language-free experience. And so the promise of this one, the reason to get excited about it, the only thing that kind of pulled me in, what the ads told me was, we're not going to be focused on the farm anymore. We've explored this claustrophobic location. We're done with that. What has happened to the world a year and a half later after aliens have decimated it? What are people like? What is humanity like? The ads promised that humans were going to be just as bad as aliens. And that's usually a good hook. I mean, you see that a lot in zombie movies. The trope that the military and the human response to something apocalyptic can be a worsening of the situation.
And I do think that was intentional, the way the trailer came off, because, yeah, it has a sinister vibe, but when I see certain scenes, like, these kids being put in this closet under the stairs seem so scared. No, they're just trying to save them. Like, it's benevolent in the film, but, yeah, I got a real sinister, there's going to be some awful people vibe in this film.
All right, I went off the reservation with this one, because in the trailer, it showed you day zero, right? You got to see the aliens coming to Earth. You got to see Emily Blunt driving a car away from a bus, and the alien is coming out the front of the bus.
Aliens driving the bus!
And so I had these thoughts in my mind that this entire movie was a prequel. And then in the trailer, you see Emily Blunt and the kids encounter a bearded guy. I'm like, what if she met John Krasinski after the invasion? What if he's not the biological father of these kids? They could add such a dimension to this family and take everything you know and spin it on your head. I thought I was in for a whole prequel and everything I thought I knew I didn't know. Nope, none of that happened.
Yes, you were definitely off the reservation.
Yeah, but I get where you're thinking, and that is a really unique idea. There's a lot of ways they could have gone with this. Just to put it out there, there's a lot of things they could have done with this plot. There's a lot we never knew about what these aliens were. Like Cloverfield, we saw it from a micro perspective. What's the macro? What's going on in the larger world? Well, Arnie, let's give them the plot and see what we find out in Quiet Place Part 2.
Well, the movie starts, as I said, on day zero before the aliens arrived on Earth. We see happy nuclear family, the Abbotts. Dad Lee, played by John Krasinski, Mother Evelyn, played by Emily Blunt, eldest child Reagan, again played by Millicent Simmons, older son Marcus, played by Noah Jupe, and youngest son Beau. Did they say, like, Lee and Evelyn's names in the first movie even? I mean, I knew we talked about Bo, but...
I remember Lee.
They didn't say too much in general, Arnie, but I got it from probably IMDb is where I remember the names.
Well, at the start of this movie, they've all gathered for Marcus's baseball game, and we see the family had a friend, Emmett, played by Cillian Murphy. But carnage ensues when the aliens arrive, but the Abbotts survive. We then jump forward to immediately after the first movie. Lee is dead and Evelyn is caring for her newborn infant. And without Lee and without a place to stay as it had caught on fire, the family go in search of other people. They come across a steel mill, but it's booby-trapped. Marcus gets his leg broken in a bear trap and the group is almost killed by aliens drawn to his screams. They're saved by Emmett! You know, the guy we were introduced to conveniently at the beginning? Well, he's been living at the soundproof steel mill. His entire family has been killed, and he knew Lee and his family were in the valley, but didn't want to connect with any other survivors. But his hard heart melts thanks to encouragement by this family. See, at this higher altitude, Reagan and Marcus get a radio signal playing Beyond the Sea. Reagan is convinced there are people on a nearby island, and using their radio tower, her cochlear implants could broadcast the frequency that hurts and disables the aliens. She goes off alone, and after some prodding by Evelyn, Emmett goes after her. They reach the island where it's basically a utopia. A large group of people are living completely normally. It turns out the aliens can't swim, so none of them made it to this island, and the people there have lived well and broadcast the signal to bring any other survivors. But an alien stowed away in Emmett and Reagan's boat and starts to kill the island residents. Meanwhile, back at the steel mill, Evelyn leaves Marcus and the baby so she can go to town and get medical supplies for Marcus's foot. She returns to find an alien stalking the boy. On the island, Emmett and Reagan race to the radio station, chased by this alien, and at the station, Reagan uses her hearing aid to broadcast the frequency. Reagan is then able to kill the disabled alien. And at the steel mill, the sound plays over the radio. It disables the alien attacking them, and Marcus shoots and kills that alien as credits roll.
And maybe the best joke in the entire movie comes right here at the beginning. Maybe the best stuff in the entire franchise comes right here in the beginning. We think we're looking at post-apocalyptic Main Street. No, this is day one. This is what it was like before aliens came streaking down from the sky. Nobody was doing anything in this town anyway. It was dead.
I had never considered that the town where they went to get supplies and that little Bo got his fatal weapon of death toy space shuttle was the town that they lived in. For some reason, I just thought that they had migrated and found the place where they set up. I never thought that their little sand trails were taking them back home. I hadn't even given it consideration. So this makes me look at that first film in a new and different way.
Yeah, and I do think going back and having, if not a prequel film, but a prequel moment, just tells everyone, gets them all on the same page. If you missed the first movie, the scene is going to tell you everything you need to know. Starting with Lee, John Krasinski, spoiler alert, was killed in the last film. He is still here as director and gets to cameo as his character stopping into this store. Kind of a funny moment. You know, everyone else is like transfixed by the television. There's a smoking skyscraper. There's no way not to think about 9/11 on that. Are we so blasé in 2018 that we would walk out of the store and not get context on that? That's what Lee does.
He's such a good dad. He can't miss that game he's already late for.
Yeah, he's already late. And you say he walks into some store. No, this is the store. This is the store that's going to have that space shuttle toy on the shelf that's going to lead to their son's death.
Yeah, I mean, yes, we've seen it before. And that's always helpful to flashback to things that we know. But is Arnie right? Wouldn't it be more interesting if they were urbanites, that they were living in New York City, that they had a harder battle to get to the farm than we thought? It would certainly be more of the movie that would need to explain that journey.
That would be a whole movie if, yeah, you try to escape New York because of aliens. I mean, it's Cloverfield. Like, yeah, it wouldn't just be a little 10-minute prequel opening segment here.
But I do think this is a grabber. I do think that this opening is the best moment in the film, maybe the best moment in either film. It really is, because we know what's going to happen to them. We have that sense of irony that these people don't know what's going on. There's just tension here at a little league ballpark. All of a sudden, we're just waiting for it to drop. They think that something bad is happening at a skyscraper in some city. They don't know it's coming for them. It's going to land in a barn a mile away.
Maybe middle America, these rural folk, are just more, they feel more secure, more sense of control, because they see fire in the sky and they're like, oh, I guess we should end this baseball game and casually walk to our cars. Like, me, I'm panicking. I'm running for shelter.
I think they started running pretty quick. I think that there was a moment of shock as they see some flaming thing in the sky and then suddenly realizing, yeah, they may want to get home pretty quickly. But it's at this game where we do get introduced to the important new character, Emmett. I had no idea this was Cillian Murphy when I saw this in theaters.
I knew Cillian Murphy was in this film and I still missed it. And like, it was, I was way into the movie till I realized that was him.
I thought this was Dax Shepard for half the film. I mean, he's got the beard, he's got the accent, he doesn't have the meth addiction, but the rest of it is all Dax Shepard.
Who is Cillian Murphy to you? I think of 28 Days Later specifically, which has a similar kind of premise, you know, post-apocalyptic horror movie.
Yeah, 28 Days Later is what I went to, and in fact, before even knowing this was Cillian Murphy, I mean, I walked out of the theater not knowing. And when somebody asked me, I said, if A Quiet Place is 28 days later, A Quiet Place Part 2 is 28 weeks later, without even knowing the Cillian Murphy connection. But I've seen Cillian in a number of Danny Boyle things. 28 Days Later is my go-to, but also The Scarecrow and Inception. What isn't in his wheelhouse to me is Down Home Southern Boy.
Yeah, I think of Sunshine, 28 Days Later, Inception. He, even though, you know, Inception is definitely a big film, like, he does seem to bring more indie cred, if that's the right word, even though he's in some pretty big films. Like, when he shows up, I'm like, oh, okay, there's something to this movie. And so that's why I was interested that he was going to be in this. I'm like, he just brings something with that.
Well, again, the promise was that people are going to be worse when you emerge from your quarantine. He typically is played kind of, even if they're heroic characters, damaged characters. I expect that he has a pathos, that he has a dark streak in him that, of course, we know we're going to see him later. It's even mentioned that he has a brother that's connected to the military, and people maybe aren't panicking because they think that this is some kind of, I don't know, government operation. That would make me panic still. But I get the sense that he has a darker streak. He feels a lot like John Krasinski. If you needed a new father figure, you might think of Cillian, but in the end, he's not as warm. He's not as cuddly. He's not as approachable or funny.
I can't imagine Cillian Murphy starring in a hit sitcom. I'll just go there.
Yeah, agreed. And so what they're really doing here, just to be blunt, is they're setting up a new father figure for the children, specifically for Reagan. But, you know, they're not going to try and push a romance with him and Emily Blunt. And again, there's just something about him, even here, even in these moments when he's just shooting the shit at a ballpark, that make you think that a little off-putting.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be more like the military guys that he fought in 28 Days Later that were the Sinisters one. He does give off that vibe.
Right, but the main event here is Main Street. A lot of people are crowded looking in the sky. The cop comes riding in here with his sirens blaring, thinking he has a little bit of information to share. Seconds later, his vehicle is flipped, and everyone seems to know pretty quick, don't make a sound. They catch on really fast that it's sound that's going to draw the monster to you.
I don't think they get that right away, because, yeah, they're all going to run into this diner to hide. I think they're just being quiet, because, like, oh, if it walks by, you know. But they're still kind of whispering in that. It's when that phone goes off, and it turns and jumps in there immediately. I think it's because it's so loud. Maybe then they started to piece the things together.
Yeah, and plus you're in a movie theater, presumably watching this. Someone's phone going off is like everyone turns and wants to kill. Like, we all know that. Like, you're dead to us. Turn it off. Always.
It's an exciting scene. And what was shocking to me is how much of this was done practically. I watched the bonus features. I don't know why they did so much of the scenes practically, but they really did. The scene where Evelyn is in the car, this was in the trailer, driving her two kids, the two boys, and then a bus starts careening at her and she goes in reverse. That's a real bus. I just always assumed that was a CGI bus that looked really good. They actually had a bus there.
Yeah, that wasn't just like green screened in?
No, there was a bus. I mean, of course, they were on tracks. It was safe. It was, you know, a big stunt rig, but it was all done in one long shot. Krasinski intentionally tried to do just long takes here to pull you into the movie. He did that in the diner scene. He does it in this car scene. But yeah, they had a bus in front of the car. I don't know why. I guess you say this movie cost so much. I think they could have put some into CGI and saved a bus.
Yeah, it looks really good. I just said, they did good CGI in this one because these aliens, like, they're not hiding them this time. They're not hiding the shark like in Jaws. Like, I think they're more confident. They got more money for the CGI. They do look better. They are just so awkward the way they move. Like, there's something always just weird about that. But overall, yeah, way better looking. I mean, we barely got a glimpse of one in that first film.
And I forgot about Bo. I've got to say, even though he was really the tragic opener of the first movie, and I spoke to how the first movie could almost be seen, all of that quiet really was about repression and grief about losing a child. Like, it was something to have him back there. Like, just the reminder of what they lost, even though I know John Krasinski isn't going to live either, there was something about seeing Bo and trying to protect him in these scenes that was impactful. It is, even though it's a prequel, and even though we know what they're going to be doing 500 days later from now, again, exciting stuff and a great reintroduction to this family and to the problem at hand.
And showing that they're unintentional action heroes, you know? Krasinski may play Jack Ryan over on Amazon, but here, he's just your everyday guy, but these people have quick reflexes and a survival instinct that allows them to survive even though their townspeople are being slaughtered. Although Reagan and her father do get lucky when one sheriff's deputy decides to start shooting at one of the aliens and that pulls them away.
Yeah, don't give all this credit to the family. Like, that guy was heroic, Ronnie the cop, like, trying to save them.
It's almost disappointing when we cut back to present day, right? Because, like, we don't really know how they got out of this jam. We know that they're temporarily spared because the alien was distracted by the cop. But yeah.
Every new film will get another 10 minutes of that story.
I would like that. I think I like my idea for this whole film being a prequel better than the film we got. Now, that's not to say I don't like what we're going to discuss. I'm just saying this is the best part of the movie.
Yeah, and certainly having the family working together was the thrust of it. It really was a family story. What's so unique about this movie is that even though the survivors are still here, and there are four of them, one's a baby, one's a frightened son that won't ever do anything, and then the mom always has to be nursing. So it really is a one-woman show. This movie franchise really becomes about Reagan and her journey. And I feel like the rest of the people don't matter now. They could have almost killed them all off and just had the deaf girl go have the part two.
You said that's what you wanted last movie, Stuart, is that it would have been interesting to have it all from Reagan's point of view. This time, I think we almost do have that.
Yeah, that seems to be the intent. And again, part of that is because, if for no other reason, it adds to that layer of suspense, is that she can be in a difficult situation and not be able to hear the danger approaching her from behind. They'll play with that in some of the compositions.
One of the things I wish they would have explained with Reagan here, because this, perhaps my biggest problem with this film, is it's really cool. Like, they got this weapon where she's going to stick that implant into the mic and with the amp and make that noise and the mom could shoot. Like, it's a really cool visual. Except she takes the amp here because they got to go on the road and she cuts the cord on it and then it still works. And I don't understand why. And I've gone to Reddit. No one understands why. It distracts me the entire film that they showed her cutting the cord off the amp and never explained how they powered it up after that.
Yeah, I agree. It was an electrical device. It had no battery.
Every time I watched this film, even the first viewing, it upset me so much.
Yeah, it's a little easy now. I don't. Before, they didn't know how to fight back, so they had to just be quiet. They had to tiptoe around the danger. Now that they got this speaker and shotgun routine, I'm just less worried about them. It seems like that they should be able to take care of themselves. Do they need to leave? We're going to see them starting out on this journey, like setting a fire, trying to see where the nearest place they can go to, who's going to respond. I thought they had a good thing going on in the farm.
It caught fire, though. I mean, I had the same thought, but the bonus features really drive home They couldn't stay there because the fire was destroying it, and they needed to find someplace else with refuge.
Yeah, and I figured the noise from the fire would draw in more aliens.
I do agree, though, it felt like that was a pat ending last time.
Yeah.
The question of, do we need a sequel at all? Because at the end of that first movie, they have the weapons. They have the shotgun, and they have the cochlear implant. That's all they need. So yeah, it feels like there's virtually no danger. They are now stronger than the aliens. So what is the sequel? Helping others.
Yeah, I figured the end of this film would be like the end of the first act and like see humanity take the war back on the aliens, which we should say we weren't 100% sure if they were aliens or not. Were they bioengineered? Definitive. Just call it out. They're aliens this time.
Well, Emmett has a brother on a military base.
Yeah, we could have shot a missile that had these in them or something. Sure. Okay.
Right. That could have been, you know, China could have shot it over at us. Who knows? Who knows? Nothing is definitive. I will say it is a disappointment that if you came here wanting to learn new information about the aliens or maybe anything, there's not a lot new. There's not a lot that we're going to learn that wasn't already explained in the first movie. This movie is about recreating the cat and mouse, and I don't think we learned too much about the aliens or even this family that we didn't already know. But we are going to learn more about Emmett. They're going to follow the path that they created that they could walk on barefoot.
And I want to say there's some really great visuals in this. And that's like one of them. Again, these silent moments, because it is more or less a silent film. Like when they get to the end of that sand path, I have like an emotional feeling. Like, oh my goodness, this is new uncharted territory. So I got problems with this movie. It's more than just that amp. But there are some moments that really do hit me like that.
And what's funny is for me, it felt like Drax was sitting behind me in the movie theater. They're going, metaphor. But yeah, I thought it was a great visual. And again, it kind of drove home to me that because that was their hometown, they're like birds that never left the nest, right? I mean, as somebody who finally moved away from the land where I was born, I'd lived other places for short periods of time, a few years, but I have finally forever left the nest. And now I... really seeing it on the second viewing, it drove home to me, these are people leaving their hometown and venturing into the unknown.
The fire that responded to is actually unattended. It's this barrel smoldering on a trestle, you know, above the train tracks, and doesn't seem like they've found anyone. And then all of a sudden, Evelyn steps through a fence, hits a tripwire, and someone has intentionally, like, put out a noise trap where bottles drop down, wanting whoever should come into this place to die by alien. Why would Emmett want that to happen?
Because what he said is the people who have survived aren't the kind of people you want to save. I got to figure that, like most zombie movies we've seen post-apocalypse, you're going to end up with people trying to rob you, take your place, take your stuff, take your women. And so the best thing to do is to set traps so that they can never get to you. The only humans we're going to see in the alien land other than Emmett are people who seem to want to rape children. So I'd set bear traps also.
Then here's a radical idea. Okay, you open up with that prequel stuff like we talked about. You think it's going to be about the same family. And then, nope, swerve. It's Side Story. It's about Emmett and about how he maybe was a loving dad like Lee and kind of goes the opposite way. If that first film was a family movie, then yeah, tell his story. I feel like I could piece things together. He's bitter because he lost his son and his wife just died. But I don't know much more than that besides that little, oh, some people are really bad speech he gives.
And if you want to be even more radical, let's just say there's not as many aliens around anymore. Like they've been, I don't know. It seems to me like more than this family could have figured out that feedback hurts them. Like they could, they're not the only geniuses that could have come up with this trap.
I mean, I'm sure some missiles were launched. We took out some hordes.
Right. It seems to me that you should just make human beings. You should show more examples of humans being cruel to other humans. Maybe they figured that's not what people pay their money for. We want the aliens. We want the silence and all of that. The braver choice would be to show us what you're talking about. Humanity itself may not be worth saving.
And I don't know, I'm speculating here, but I think one of the draws perhaps for A Quiet Place is that it's not just a horror action film, but it was about a family. I know this is one of my wife's favorite films, and I gotta, you know, think it's because, yes, it's about this family and this mother giving birth and just these things she connects with that really draw, like she loves that first film so much. And so, yeah, I don't know if they want to be daring enough to turn this into like a cannibal apocalypse.
Right. But you are making a sequel. And I just want to point out that there, you're always at that crossroads of, do we just do the same thing again to lesser effect? Or do we risk, going to uncharted territory and pissing off people that got a different experience than what they wanted? I'm in the camp that I want something fresh and novel. And Emmett is what I'm hanging on. This family, they feel lesser and more protected by having their weapons. He looks more damaged. And there's this whole thing built up about him. It should be said, they come running into his domain. He's taken over this steel mill.
Yeah, he could be sinister. We keep seeing him put the family in his crosshairs.
Yeah, he's up there on a roof, like sniper rifle, ready to take them out. He knows them. I think he recognizes them. Oh yeah, there's the family that comes to the ball games, still going to shoot them because he assumes that they've lost their morals like everybody else. Maybe we should have had other people we met at that ballpark that we could see be horrible and hateful. I think Emily Blunt doesn't look psychotic to me, but her son certainly does step into a horrible bear trap and creates a scream that is blood-curdling and hard to listen to. And what saves them is the fact that A, they demonstrate how you kill an alien. Cillian Murphy's character has never seen that before. And B, he's a softy for the fact that they have the newborn in the soundproof crib. That he just can't imagine someone that just gave birth being a maniac.
That's my biggest problem with him, is he softens up way too easily. You said you wanted to see more of these hardened humans, and I agree. And yet, the movie that I kept going back to when it came to Emmett was what I wanted was almost more of a 10 Cloverfield Lane type situation, you know?
Yeah.
And then I realized they've already made 10 Cloverfield Lane, so I want them to do something else here. But yet, the idea of introducing Emmett as damaged and as dangerous, especially in that trailer, it looked like in the trailer, A, you didn't know that Evelyn knew him, but you thought Evelyn was being kidnapped. And there's just so many of these post-apocalyptic movies of people on the run. I mean, after, 14, 28 seasons of The Walking Dead, how many more of these stories can be told?
Right. But you can do it on a big scale. And again, they got the gimmick of the sound design. They will make their premise, as maybe cliched as it's become, we've become so familiar with post-apocalyptic, I think we've all been trained in how we're going to live in it when it actually happens, next year? I think this one, again, because we have the deaf child, and because we have aliens that hunt by sound only but are blind, I do feel like that's going to make the concept feel fresh, because you're playing with those dynamics. Emmett, they're really harsh on him. Very early on, we have this scene where Evelyn is like accusing him, why didn't you come for us? My husband lit the fire.
Yeah, did they want to leave? I never got the impression they wanted to leave, that they were desperate to get out of there. They had a really good situation. They got a baby on the way. They got to get that soundproof nursery ready.
They had more control living on the farm than they ever would moving up to the steel mill. This, where you close the door and suddenly you don't have air. Like, this is a really bad setup. I don't know why they would want to leave their farm. They didn't give me the impression they were looking to be rescued. They were looking maybe for the aliens to stop attacking them,
which they figured out how to do. They didn't need that stuff from Emmett.
Yeah, but they didn't want to leave their quiet place.
I think there's two different things going on here. First is the reestablishing of community. They were all alone, and while they weren't looking to be rescued, they were looking to reconnect with other human beings. And the other thing is, you're dealing with Evelyn hours after her husband died. So it's very easy to start blaming people around you while you're still in that first stage of grief.
Although I feel like we're supposed to be on her side. Later, Reagan is going to say something similar, like, you're not my dad, you're not as good as him, and he would never do that. I think we're to have a judgmental position about Emmett that I never adopt. That other than the fact that he was up on his roof with a sniper rifle, he never did take a shot at them. That'd be one thing.
And he could have been using it as, like, binoculars just to see them.
If Marcus got shot by him instead of walking into a bear trap, that would tell me that Emmett is cold-blooded and maybe a reason why this family is mad at him.
Yeah, we're definitely supposed to see Emmett in kind of a dark light. He's the sinister one. We can't really trust him because he's the one that always has to have moments where he changes and he goes along with this family. And maybe because it's A Quiet Place and that's their gimmick, they can't have big long dialogue scenes, but like, I feel like I never know why Emmett gives in, except that he just gives in. It's like, okay, they've pushed me for 3 minutes. I'll just agree now.
Because he's a good guy, Jacob. We saw at the beginning, he's a good guy. He's been hardened by circumstance, but underneath, there's a heart of gold. It's so cliche.
I don't mind the cliche. I mind the fact that I never am convinced that he's hardened. Like, he's soft in the beginning, middle, and end of this movie. And we're not going to get a whole lot of examples of other human beings. It should just be said this cast is very depopulated. And most of what we're going to spend our time in is on the road fighting aliens kind of scenario. Reagan is going to realize that there is a radio station broadcasting from a nearby island. You can walk there in a day with boat assistance, of course. But she feels like that she can bring her cochlear implant trick to their radio waves and wipe out all the rest of the aliens. And so for reasons, the mother was willing to walk so many miles to unknown destination, but now she doesn't want to go there. She's not going to move the family on that short distance.
She's got 30 feet of concrete above her.
Does that feel safe in there? I guess that is the way to think about it.
I thought it was safe until the end, where it seems like the alien just gets in super easy anyway.
Yeah, there's that. And also, I'd think if you've been there any length of time, you would find a way to make it where your only barrier between life and death is a dirty towel that has to prevent a lock from coming down. I think you'd quickly make top priority breaking off that handle and getting a lock on the inside.
Yeah, Emmett has been here, I think they say 11 weeks, that he had a wife that died 11 weeks ago. She was suffering in pain, and her screams brought the alien, we can presume. And of course, he had that kid at the ballpark, and there are lots of drawings of that kid. We never get the story. We don't need the story. We know what happens to little children in this universe. They get eaten. They make noise. They're not as cautious. And so, yeah, he should have had 11 weeks to pimp out this place and really make it a place that might seem like a place you could hold out for a while. But it's a puzzle to me that, yeah, this is a really bad, like, one night stay in this hard metal furnace that could get locked and you could run out of air really quick. Or you could walk a day and get to a place where you can broadcast the signal and kill all the aliens. I mean, who stays behind?
Yeah, and I know they want to create immediacy, but those tubes, those are big. You're not running out in 3 minutes.
And as far as that radio broadcast goes, sure, I like Beyond the Sea. It's a fun tune. But why wouldn't you just have a voice going,
just say, come to this island, people.
Yeah, we are on the island. Just put it on a loop.
I mean, maybe they didn't have a DJ make it over there and they can't figure out the equipment.
I'm like, come on, somebody would have figured out a cart player, because a cart is just a single loop. And maybe it's all digital now. Maybe, I know.
Hook up an iPod, like, and just hit repeat.
Yeah. If in these 400 days, John Krasinski could create a cochlear implant better than the entire world scientists could create in 2,000 years, somebody on that island could figure out a radio station to play something beyond the sea.
Or maybe this is kind of important because it's the fate of humanity. Just have someone like manning it, like in shifts, and saying, hey, come to this island. Like, yeah, it's my second biggest problem after that amp.
I would be worried I'd get there and it'd be Kevin Spacey. You know, he made that awful movie Beyond the Sea all about Bobby Darin, and it's atrocious. It was atrocious before we knew all the things we knew about Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, there's many reasons why I'd be afraid if I got to the island and it was Kevin Spacey.
But he'd be about the only person I'd think that would want a continuous loop of this song. Yeah, to be clever, telling people that somehow if they get beyond the shores, that the aliens can't swim and that they'll be protected. It seems too coded.
Yeah, they don't need to speak in code. The aliens don't speak English.
Right. Yeah. So, all right. I think we're all saying it. There's lots of problems with this setup. I feel like in lots of ways, this movie is diminished from the tension that was so rich and immediate. Like, you get grabbed by that original movie immediately. You're learning the rules and you're sucked in about how would you live like this? Now that they're kind of blundering around, it does feel like they're looking for the script. It does feel like, what is the plot of this movie? And in doing so, I think they nominate Reagan as the only one that really matters. She sets off alone for reasons, and she gets to have the fun movie while everyone else gets to, like, huddle in a furnace for too long.
Yeah, Marcus has got to babysit most of the film.
Yeah. I mean, I'd prefer they'd be dead. Honestly, I preferred you had killed them all off and had that child be on her own than to have them have the stupid adventures they do running in and out of tubes.
I understand John Krasinski probably doesn't want to kill his wife on screen for any given reason, but it is true that their B plot here is A, pointless, and B, uninteresting. I mean,
very.
I get that maybe Reagan was the big favorite of the last movie. She had the biggest emotional arc coming out of it. But to me, my instinct would be different. My instinct would be Reagan was the last movie. Let's give Marcus something to do this movie. I would think you'd want to play up the things that were downplayed last movie. And instead, it is going to be Reagan and her sidekick, Emmett, on an adventure to follow a radio signal.
Yeah, if you had killed off the adults and then were the kids having to learn to be on their own, no Emily Blunt. I realize that might have hurt box office too. You want a star of some caliber. But yeah, if it were just two kids holding their baby brother or sister, do we even know the gender of this baby?
I don't think so.
Name? Anything? We know nothing.
I tried so hard to find a name when I was writing the plot summary. All I could find was the baby.
Okay, yeah. The point is, if it were just kids, like, doing walkabout on their own, that would be really powerful. Oh my God, and all these scary adults everywhere they go, that could create the, even though they have the answer with this cochlear implant thing, they're kids, and you would have tension for that. But as is, I'm really frustrated.
And I feel like that's kind of where they want to go by the end of this film. Let's make it about the kids. But yeah, do that at the beginning. Let's get there real quick.
You have to be callous enough to just take the protectors out. And that means no Emily Blunt.
Emily Blunt's got Jungle Cruise coming after this. Like, she's okay.
Is she? I don't know if that's okay.
Yeah, I watched it. I don't know.
Yeah, but again, the fact that we have to cut to meaningless scenes of her getting air tanks and gauze at pharmacies and not in any danger at all, just time filler, is a real mistake. So if it's a Reagan movie, let's focus on that part. Reagan goes off on her own, and we have this creepy moment where she gets to Spring Creek train platform, and all you see are the commuter shoes and purses and bags and all that. Just, I love any time in a post-apocalyptic movie they can do that shorthand visual that tells you about all the lives that must have been lost here.
And that set me up to think that this was going to be more of the film because, yeah, it's such a great moment. We want to know, like, you came up with this great idea with these aliens attacking and anything that makes noise. Like, yeah, we want to see these kind of big set pieces that tell us stories without actually having to show us the scene.
Agreed. I think that it's spooky. And having her on her own, while it does feel a little bit 80s movie, Goonies, E.T., the little kid going off to have the adventure when she's completely alone. I'm liking the spookiness of it. And yeah, it does feel like she's probably over her head when the alien does show up. And despite her cochlear implants and her magically powered amp, it takes the beating, but just keeps coming after her.
Well, she's no Linda Hamilton. She can't pump that shotgun one-handed. And so,
yeah, she just grazed it on that first shot.
Yeah, again, it looks like she's really finished when she's in the train car here and it's coming for her. But immediately they take that away by saying now Emmett is going to follow her. If I was worried about what Emmett might do to her, if we had any indication that Emmett sells children to cannibals or something like that, if he truly was a menacing character, then I might say out of frying pan into fire. But as soon as Emmett comes up behind and shoots the alien, I go, well, I don't need to worry about her road trip. She'll be fine.
there's like a surprise lack of tension for me because, like you said, Emmett never feels dangerous. Like, I would think, oh, here's the signal coming from this island. Maybe that's to lure people to chop them up and eat them. We don't know. Like, but that never feels sinister. Like, even once we get to the docks, like, at that point, I was so like, nothing's bad here. I'm like, oh, they're just going to help him get a boat. Like, I wanted to feel more danger than just from the aliens. Yeah, this is the sequel. You got to expand that.
Yeah, I think in order to do that, what I need, the quick list would be children on their own, no adults to help them at all. Children, like, maybe running out of bullets. Like, she doesn't have any more in the shotgun, so the speaker trick doesn't work anymore. They have to be quiet. And then, yeah, I think you just need more stops along the way. It feels like they'll get to the island really quick. And that seems like a mistake. You want them to keep encountering new scenarios of whatever kind. As far as I can tell it, she gets to this train station, she'll go to some docks, and then she's there.
Yeah, and I suppose if I was having the greatest time in my life, I would want her to have more adventures along the way. As it is, I am pretty skeeved out by the dock people who come and try to kidnap her and kill Emmett. I mean, this is what he had been warning about. These are the kinds of people who are left out there, the kinds of people who caused him to set bear traps and everything. And yeah, it does look like they will at least be separated. I never feel like anything bad will happen to Ray again. Emmett, I'm not so sure about it. I mean, they killed John Krasinski last film. This seems to be the replacement. I do feel like Emmett could be dead meat at some point.
Sure, and you're right. What if in this scene, we did have some time where she was taken away and put into some kind, we can see her taken back to what people have become. Any opportunity to explore that? I mean, you're right. It's shorthand. We get these are bad people. They look like Jesus, but they sure ain't Christian with those switchblades and with the nooses that have the noisemakers on it. We know they have bad ends in mind when they corner these two off the docks, but it's just over too soon.
Yeah, and it doesn't, again, quite make sense to me, like, so many things here. Like, I don't know, you don't mug people, because if you're going to threaten to kill them, well, they'll just make noise because they're going to die anyway. Like, and may as well bring that alien. Like, they put this necklace of jingle bells around Emmett's, like, don't move or the aliens will come. Well, you're going to obviously kill him, so, like, bring the, which he does, he's going to dive in and make that noise and bring the aliens.
Yes, the fact that early on at the baseball game he happens to ask, how do I sign dive? And that comes into play. He remembers this over a year later to tell her to dive.
I mean, it's what I would imagine dive to be.
Yes, I mean, he didn't need that just to think that is dive in the water. But I do wish there had been more of this because I'm enjoying the exploration of the post-apocalyptic world with the danger of noise there. Everything that's being done feels a little cliche, and yet everything that's being done is being done in a totally new way because they can't talk. They can't make sound. You can't use the tricks that every movie has done so far. So yeah, I do wish there was more of this, and I do find it fun that Emmett gets that guy against the post and waits till the last second. This is where we learn aliens can't swim, right? I mean, apparently this is widely known, but not to Reagan and Emmett.
But we do see them swim. What is kind of confusing is that they do end up in the water. It's not like Signs. It's not like if they touch the water, they're going to be dead.
No, they just drown.
Yeah, well, maybe. I don't know. They look like they could dog paddle a little bit, but it's like Marco Polo. If you're blind, if you can't see, you're just not going to be effective hunters in the water. Not in the same way.
And we just knew, right, when we see that alien get on the boat and it's just like drifting off screen. Okay, that's going to end up on that island.
I can't say that I knew that that would happen, but I knew once they got to the island, they weren't out of danger. I'll put it that way. How about that? I was kind of hoping that this would be an island where the people seem nice, and then we saw their sinister side.
Yeah, Cannibal Island.
Yeah, I was really expecting for that turn.
Yes. Again, 28 days later, when Cillian Murphy gets to the military base, right? That's what I was thinking, especially when it's Demon Hounsou there. And I just know him from a handful of things. In my mind, he's a name actor who wouldn't just take a nothing role, who's cast in a nothing role here.
They don't even give him a name in the credits.
And yet, to quote him in Guardians, Who? I mean, like, he doesn't even have a name. He's just like Man on Island is how he's listed in credits. So again, you're right. He's an Oscar-nominated actor from Amistad who gets to basically have one scene saying what should have been visualized, the evacuation.
Yeah, I knew this is where they didn't have the money to do another flashback because you show this, you don't tell it.
Right, yeah. That, can you imagine how terrifying it would be to be waiting for a boat evacuation, people starting to get antsy?
You got
to
do it silently.
Yeah, trampling, and then, like, it all goes to hell. Yeah, that should be an amazing sequence. Hell, do that here. Yeah, you don't tell the stories, ghost stories of the past. You want to scare us by having these kind of big moments. And I would think that the $60 million that they now have should be enough to do some of it anyway. But maybe it doesn't go as far as that. I mean, it's obviously not a $100, $200 million movie. It can't do what World War Z did. But it's too bad because, yeah, we get to the island and it's kind of anticlimactic. They're like, yeah, we're going to play your cochlear thing. It's just that the alien got here first.
Yeah, they sit around on this island way too long, though. For a movie that never had a whole lot of momentum going for it, it seems to really hit a wall right here.
This is the scene that really sticks out during a pandemic time, like, especially like the times we're in right now, post 2020 with Delta. It's like, here is this peaceful community. They've done it. They got vaccinated. They're strong. And then some people come in, they bring that Delta variant with them and just wipes them out, even though they thought things were going good.
Even savoring that irony, like, I don't know who any of these people are. I see somebody at a well get stabbed. They put the kids in the closet, and I think it's an interesting choice that Reagan is not considered a kid. They bring her in the car that's meant to lure the monster away rather than protect her. What a choice. But she is a little girl. I would think that you wouldn't want to put her in danger.
This is how we know Emmett's not as good a father as Lee is.
Maybe.
And she's the one who has the plan with the cochlear implant and everything. I mean,
he's seen her use that, though.
I mean, you just push a button. It's not rocket science.
Yeah, there's no trick to it. You don't have to be deaf. There's no magic thing that only she can understand. If anything, like the way she slams it against the microphone, I'm like, you're going to break that and you're really going to be in trouble. But hey, believe it or not, we're at the end of the film. Like, the stunner is, now that they're driving to the radio station, we're, you know, 10 minutes away from it all being over.
And, you know, we're going through a lot of this pretty quick because it's just, yeah, we're traveling from this point to that point. I do want to say the way, even though the story is very thin, like, I get into these, you know, chases, and I really like the way it's edited. Like, it's a way that keeps me engaged. Like, they keep going back and forth between the kids, and, like, they'll have a scene, like, with water coming out of a sprinkler, and then they'd go to, like, the water and the dock scene. And, like, they do that again with fire later on. And so there's things like that where I'm like, yeah, this is a really thin story. They're not doing much, but at least it's being told in a somewhat interesting way that's, like, keeping me engaged enough.
That's exactly it, is that this is not being made by hacks. The same people that had the quality control to make that first movie are putting the same care into this movie. There's just not enough in this movie to give you the same effect. And again, because we're not learning anything about these characters, and many of them aren't even in interesting situations. They're sitting around foundries waiting for mom to come back. Yes, it's talented craftsmen people doing what they can with cross-cutting and juxtaposition to try and make the unexciting more palatable.
And yeah, back at the foundry, I think, honestly, a child of that age, and might I just add, these children have aged a lot in a day.
No, that can't be helped. They did shoot this, 2 years after the first one. So, yeah, there's going to be growth spurts.
I know. Especially Noah Jupe. He is, you might as well have recast for as much as he looks like he did in the last movie. But I'd still think a boy his age with a foot in a bear trap would now be a one-footed person. At the very least, bear traps don't work by just trapping you. They break bone. They're gonna play around a little bit like he needs help, but I think he'd need a lot more help than what he gets here.
I think he sells it with his screams, but yeah, he's got to have like a peg, I guess not quite a leg, a peg ankle and foot.
Yeah, they could turn it into a weapon or something, you know, like put something spiky at the end of it. And yeah, he can fight back now with it. Yeah, this character is just annoying in this movie. Like, I hate to say that, but like, because the fact he's always crying and whimpering, he's very good at that. Again, when he screams on that bear trap, I believe every second of that pain.
Nominate him to be a scream queen. He deserves it.
Right, yeah. I think he could be a scream queen. He is going to be in the, what I assume to be, if not the Corey Haim, the Corey Feldman role in the Lost Boys remake. So you guys will be reviewing him next year. They're priming him for big things. I think he could be a good actor, but this role is not good. Him waiting around for mom, and then what does he see? I think what he stumbles into is the fact that Emmett has kept his wife's body behind a sheet for a while, which I don't know. I don't have any judgment about. I guess the band wasn't willing to let her go.
Well, what's he going to do with the body? You got to dig a hole. That's a lot of noise.
You don't want to know, Jacob. It's a lonely, lonely time.
Well, it would be one thing if he found out something about Emmett that would make us, again, suspect that he was capable of something. Maybe he killed his wife. Maybe that story didn't add up that he told. I don't know. I didn't write this. But if I did, I would have spent more time creating dimension. I would have spent more time coming up with reasons why people double-cross and betray and don't trust one another. And as it is, it just, he screams about a corpse and then has to cower in the, whatever that is, a furnace with the baby. And I know we shouldn't judge him, but every time he's sucking up air and taking it from the baby, I'm just like, oh, you're a bastard.
The baby doesn't need that much. It's a baby. It's got smaller lungs.
You know.
And it's crying and wasting all that oxygen. Stop crying, baby.
Yeah.
It's shared air. I don't judge him for not dying.
No. He goes as long as he can.
Well, again, he took an oxygen mask off a baby and started huffing it. I mean, a little bit. I judge him a little. I understand.
It's like they say on the airplane. If the masks come down, put your mask on and then make sure the people around you don't need help, you know? So he can't help a baby if he is dead.
He ain't helping that baby. He has been no help. I guess he was whisper singing to him something. But for the most part, I find this character useless. And yeah, a real, again, why not just kill him? Why not have Emmett shoot him in the beginning? And then we could have some real tension between these characters if that's what you wanted to create.
You want an R-rated Quiet Place.
Maybe that's it. But I want more tension. I want more dramatics. You telling me that this world has gone to hell, I'm feeling like it's gone to PG-13 hell. It's just not severe enough.
It's gone to heck.
And it's a tame PG-13. That's why I think they see this as a family film. Like, bring your 9-year-old kid to see this. It's going to be okay.
Again, I'm not judging this movie because it didn't come up with new storylines for the characters. But we need to believe that they're in danger. If we don't believe the danger is that high, then all of this quietness kind of becomes tedium.
Agreed. But I'm having fun with seeing these characters again. And you know what? A lot of this movie is putting myself in the scenario of what would I do? What would I do if I was trapped in there with that baby and the oxygen tank and I accidentally forgot to pull down the towel? What would I do to make sure I never forget to pull down the towel? You know, these kinds of scenarios are running through my head during the movie, and I'm into it, but I realize it just isn't as creative as the first one.
Yeah, agreed. I'm engaged. I'm feeling some thrills as this story goes along, but I do realize, like, this is super thin. This is fleet. There's not a lot here. It could be so much better.
They probably did have to rush this out. Again, in part because you're right. These kids are not going to stop growing until you come up with a good idea. We had the movie, first one made a bunch of money. They were probably in pre-production before the first one even left theaters. So I guess these are problems that happen when you don't have enough time. They didn't plot it as a franchise. And I guess they did approach other writers, but that ultimately we're watching what John Krasinski could come up with in the afterglow of becoming a director and seeing his esteem rise. I don't know.
Truthfully, I think that maybe, honestly, he was influenced on his time on Jack Ryan, but it seems like he came up with a number of really good set pieces, right? Like, and a lot of them were used right at the beginning because they're set pieces that required civilization. But also the dock, the diving into the water, the using bottles as a trap that would call aliens. He came up with set pieces, but forgot to put in the character stuff that made the first movie moving. You know, the first movie, I cared about that family because I felt the strife of the loss of the child. And here, I do feel like I'm watching something akin to Explorers or Lost Boys, where the kids are going to save the day. It's like the Monster Squad with blind aliens.
Yeah, when Emmett comes to Reagan and says, "I'm nothing like your dad, but you're like him," and she's crying, I don't know what they hope to get out of that. Like, I don't care about Emmett. I don't need to see him, like, atoned or shamed or any of it. He's just, I mean, again, they've lost the family element that made all the emotional stuff work. So just be exciting, you know, just get to it.
And can I throw out an idea? I feel that having Emmett there made us not miss Krasinski. It replaced one southern bearded father figure with sort of another. And I know they're not trying to make him a father figure, but he is a male protector for Reagan in this movie.
Who lost a child.
Yeah. So it would have been so much more interesting to me to not have it be a guy who was friends with Lee and a lot like Lee, you know, bring some new dynamic in there.
Have their sons be on opposite baseball teams where, like, they got in a little fisticuffs before that fire rained from the sky.
Well, I don't know. What if it was another woman? What if it was a group of children, not from the corn, but you know what I'm saying? What if it was something else? What if they came across people different from them? What if there was, other than rapists at a pier, what if they got to the island and the island was cultists or something like that? What if it was the Branch Davidians who had survived? There are just ways you could go with this that could have brought in more drama. But as it is, it's keeping me engaged with its action. I'm liking the chase on the island, even though if I was Demon Hansau, I'd be pissed you brought this alien with you.
Yeah, they seem very forgiving.
Yeah, I don't think he has time to get mad. I mean, again, it's within... I actually think the way that it plays, it's Emmett screaming, "Everyone get inside," that gets the alien off the boat.
That draws it, yes! But no, you know what they do? That guy's at the well, and they emphasize him dragging that bucket up, and that's the first one that the alien takes out.
Okay. So, Emmett is forgiven again. All right.
Yes.
He's not the terrible protector that he seems to be in every scene. Anyway, he's not much of a protector here at the end, because I think in the end, the idea is about making us understand the Abbott children are going to take care of themselves. In both cases, the adults are going to be maimed, not killed, but unable to rally physically, and it will be the kids in the foundry and here at the radio studio that have to kill the beast.
Again, Marcus could not walk. There's a movie. Every time he's walking, I'm as mad as you are about the boombox, Jacob. This kid would be hobbled like James Caan in Misery.
Forget about the walking, man. Being able to do a headshot with a pistol, like, that takes some practice.
It was almost point blank.
And Reagan, she goes, this does seem a little brutal. Like, it makes me laugh when I watch whatever Transformer movie it is where, like, Optimus Prime rips off Megatron's head. Like, yes, that's what I wanted from my childhood cartoons. Like, the fact that Reagan's gonna take this steel pipe and just, like, beat that thing, just shove it through his fleshy head. It seems like a little over the top.
You know, I think the point they're trying to drive home here is that the kids have become adults. Prematurely, the hardened world has made them as such, but they are now the stars of this franchise. And then when they make a part three, I don't think we need to expect to see Emily Blunt or even Emmett. I think it will be these kids.
You think they'll go to the island and do like a Blue Lagoon thing?
They've announced what part three is going to be a little bit, but we'll talk about that in just a second. Before that, Jacob Stewart, do you recommend part two? Jacob.
Arnie, you brought up Jack Ryan, and that really drove something that I was thinking about this film. And yeah, it's a streaming show, but it's episodic. It's like a TV series. And this definitely feels like Quiet Places, the TV show, where we go to a different place to be quiet every episode. Like, there's not a whole lot to this one. And I don't know, maybe when you tell me what they have in store for part three, this will all make sense. But like, is this the story they had to tell? Like, what did getting to that radio station and broadcasting that signal do? except save, like, your family. That's important. But what has that done for humanity? It's weird that they got more money, four times the money you're telling me, but I don't feel like I'm seeing four times the people. It's not getting a bigger view. And I feel like that's what you got to do with this kind of apocalyptic alien invasion idea is, sure, you could do one movie where it's just about a small group of survivors, but, you know, like Alien to Aliens, you got to bring in those Marines and it's just got to get bigger and add more people and expand the mythology and the lore of this world you've built. So that's my biggest problem. This should be a 45-minute TV show. You know, it's still only just over 90 minutes. It doesn't take up a whole lot of your time. It moves. And that is the compliment. And the reason I do end up recommending this film is, yes, there's problems with it, like the Magic Hamp. But it moves because of the editing. It keeps me engaged. I think the editing is what totally saves this. You're right, Stuart. There are craftsmen behind this film because I've watched a lot of schlock horror and they would break this up into two long scenes and they wouldn't have a whole lot of the going back and forth. And you just feel the time dragging and passing as Emily Blunt is slowly walking back and forth. Like, at least they're editing things here and they know how to keep it moving. And so, yeah, it's a fun, pulpy science fiction film. Not a lot to it. But you want to spend 90 minutes with your family? Sure. Watch A Quiet Place 2. Mild recommend.
Stuart.
The compliment I can give is exactly that, Jacob. Like, Krasinski is a good horror director. He knows how to shoot and compose these scenes for maximum effect. You watch that day one prologue, it's great. I really wish that had been the whole movie. I wish and thought that this was going to be the whole movie. I thought, okay, this is Halloween 2.
All prequel?
Yeah, this is Halloween 2, you know, and by that I mean that we've had three Halloween 2s by now.
Yeah, which Halloween 2 are you talking about?
The original one with Jamie Lee Curtis running around to Mr. Sandman and her brother trying to kill her in a hospital one. It's just more of The Night He Came Home. It's an even quieter place. You know, we're just going to quiet places and seeing the same old cat and mouse games. And if you like the first one, there's no reason. That's the recipe for a mild recommend. You just say, well, it's more of the same. No complaints. But I'm not going to recommend this film. And the reason is because I find that the gimmick of this movie, all of the quietness, all the things that were really making it an elevated horror movie and talking about grief and distress and claustrophobia, don't aid the second half of this movie. This movie becomes slow and tedious as it goes on because it doesn't escalate the horror. It doesn't introduce those human monsters it promised. And yeah, after a while, if you're watching a movie where there's not a lot of meaningful dialogue, not a lot of going on with the characters, I felt myself checking out. I found myself not caring how anybody ended up, even the original family. It didn't really matter to me who was going to live or die. And in the end, you order a sandwich and it doesn't come with some of the condiments you want. You still eat it, but you order a sandwich and there's no meat, there's no protein. I wouldn't expect anyone to consume this. I feel like they didn't make the full movie. They started with a good movie. They had some good ideas. They got some skill behind the camera, but this thing was just rushed to counter too quickly. And consequently, just, it's not there. They needed to bring the noise, and this film is just too damn quiet. So mild not recommend.
I'm giving this a recommend, and it's not even all that weak of one. And the reason being, while I consider this to be a big step down from the first film, I really think that both of these films should be taught and required deconstruction for anyone who ever wants to work Foley or any type of audio for film.
And Christopher Nolan.
Yes, please, Nolan, learn something here. Although there is some enunciation issue here too.
This is sound design.
Yeah, and it's not just loud like so many movies are doing these days. The sound design of these films is high art. And I wish I could learn more about the people doing it. And when I watched what few bonus features they released with this movie, they focused on visual effects. And I think that's because that's what people expect. They want to know, oh, how'd you do the alien? No. How'd you do the almost silent? You know, I am in awe of the technical prowess of this film. And the story's okay. You know, it is kind of more of the same, but if it was more of the same of a lesser film, then it wouldn't be a recommend. But because that first film was so really good in its characters and its technical. And here you're carrying on and actually improving on the technical elements, but you're giving me a story that I can't believe how fast it was over. I walked out and I'm like, that was the movie. It does feel like you said about the first movie, Stuart. It's like there was no act two. It was, we're introduced to Emmett and now Emmett is our friend.
There wasn't. That's because there is no act two in this movie. There's a lot not here in this movie.
But yeah, this is a recommend. I think it's an enjoyable film, but my statement stands. 28 Days Later, I consider an incredible suspenseful masterpiece. 28 Weeks Later, it's fine. It's not so bad. You know, it's okay. That's kind of how these two films are as well. But I am not sad that they have announced a third film, and I don't think it's going to have any of the Abbotts. It's going to be a spin-off film.
Okay, that was the other thought I had, but, you know, Cloverfield Paradox made me scared of that. But, like, maybe you just pick up and go with someone that can tell you what's going on. Scientists, these are the aliens, we've been in touch with them, give you data dumps so that we have a new perspective.
They have not revealed any details what the story is going to be, but it is being written and directed by somebody who I don't know, Jeff Nichols. His films are Take Shelter, Mud, and Loving.
Yeah. Oh, I know him. Yeah, he's definitely an up-and-coming indie director. Mud was like a modern take on Mark Twain and like Huckleberry Finn. It was an interesting film. A good choice. You know, Take Shelter is a claustrophobic film. I definitely think that he has played a lot with containment in the same way that the first Quiet Place did. So he hasn't really done horror yet. Don't know if he's got those chops, but not a bad take if you're going to pass the torch to someone new. I definitely feel like Krasinski wouldn't be interested, right? Like, not even considered.
But we're not going to have to wait too long. You know, it was 2 years between when A Quiet Place came out and when A Quiet Place 2 was supposed to come out. In 2 more years, we're going to have that spinoff, 2023.
Okay, well, yeah, I wouldn't let the iron get cold. I do think you need to strike while people are, you know, it's a fickle world we live in and new catastrophes happening all the time. I actually don't think it's a bad idea to change up the characters, although I think it'll be strange to call it Quiet Place and not have Reagan in it. I think you will miss her if none of the other cast.
Maybe it will be like some title. Subtitle, A Quiet Place Story.
I love those kind of movies. Sounds great.
A Quiet Place Origins.
Because I was dissatisfied with this movie doesn't mean I've given up on the franchise. I'm left questioning about what can be explored that they haven't done. Yes, this is more technical craft, and maybe that was enough for you. But I don't know, weren't you guys getting antsy by the end? Didn't you feel like you wanted the movie to be over? Like, I feel like it's not fun to sit through a movie that's so quiet unless there's a good reason to.
I'm the exact opposite. I'm like, where's the beef? Give me 30 more minutes.
Wow.
No, I didn't want 30 more minutes. I just, yes, I just realized as I'm watching, there's nothing to this. Okay, like, it's only 97 minutes. I could get through it. It's whatever. No way I want more than, 30 minutes more. No thanks. Pass.
Or 90 minutes more. However long this new movie is, they're going to have to, can we all agree, they're going to have to bring us information. We need to know data. I need less obscuring and ideas going on in the periphery. I need someone to do some splaining.
I don't want it to be scientists dealing with the situation. Like you mentioned, Cloverfield Paradox is a nightmare.
No, I don't want multiple dimensions being popped into this. But yes, to have a bigger view of the world. Yeah, I want that. I want to know how this is affecting everyone. Was it just this part of the country? Was it all over the world? Yeah, tell us a story.
Yeah. Politicians, people coming out of a bomb shelter 10 years later. I mean, I don't know, but you want them to have more knowledge than what this family did or shared.
Well, we will find out about that in 2 years. And donors, if you donated to our platinum level or above here directly to us with PayPal this fall of 2021, you're going to get that review for free when it comes out in 2 years. But our platinum level isn't over. We still have one more movie where instead of sound, it's sight. We're going to be reviewing the Sandra Bullock Netflix original Bird Box.
Which I haven't seen, but I know it got called a copycat, even though I think the source material came out years before A Quiet Place.
Yeah, I don't think that one one hand knew what the other one was doing. It was the same idea that just happened to come out in 2018 at around the same time, 6 months after The Quiet Place blew up the box office in movie theaters. Netflix had one of its biggest streaming successes with, the Bird Box movie. We'll be talking about that in 3 weeks. We got a couple patron shows to do in between. Starting next week, we're not done with Aliens. We're going to be covering Arrival. Dune just came out. The director for that, his original sci-fi effort, Arrival, with Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner, Oscar nominated. We're going to break down that film for October patrons. And then we're going to go to the movie theaters. For November, we're going to take a look at the new Edgar Wright movie, Last Night in Soho. Then we'll get to Bird Box.
I'm excited for Last Night in Soho. Very much Soho.
And then Paranormal Activity after that for everyone else, getting us back into the home invasion horror.
So thank you for your support. Thank you greatly. I will not remain quiet. I must thank you profusely for supporting our show and helping to keep Now Playing going. We could not do it without you. I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
Hear, hear.
So Jacob Stewart, thank you for being quiet with me. And until next time...
Once again, thank you for supporting Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed this bonus movie review. It's your support that keeps Now Playing operating. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated. Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended. Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2021, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
I definitely feel like Krasinski wouldn't be interested, right? Like, not even considered?
Oh, yeah, he's abandoning this just like he did his YouTube show.
Is that a diss? I don't know anything about his YouTube show.
Oh, I remember that. Yes.
Yeah, oh, during the pandemic, I can't remember what it was called, but then he sold it off, and, like, people are like, we're in a pandemic, this was our one piece of joy, and you just sold it to a mega corporation that's going to kill it?
Okay.
I do remember that, yes. That feels like so long ago.
I know.
That was last year?
Yep.
Okay.